Join us as we gather around the hedge, where we dig into technology, business, and culture with the finest minds in computer networking.
Hello, Tom. Oh, I see. You moved the dinosaur.
So I brought a dinosaur just for you, Russ. Here's the dinosaur. I shifted my office and Russ has been harassing me about he misses the dinosaurs. So I took one of the dinosaurs off the wall that one of my kids drew for me. And then there he is.
Well, we were very worried about the dinosaurs and what happened to them, whether they were actually chasing Tom around the room and whether we were going to have Tom much longer. Or we were going to be in one of those situations where my dinosaur ate your stick figures. Family, yes. Or whatever it is people put on the back of their car. And today we have Alvaro Ritana, who is still in Raleigh. He's a slowpoke. You know, I moved out of Raleigh and Alvaro's still there. He's just...
Yes, but now you're missing all the fun with the snow storms that we've been having. They closed all the schools. They delayed everything. And it was a total, I think, of about half an inch. So it was, you know, really exciting.
We've already had 3 snow incidents here. One of them was 2 inches. Nobody's closed a darn thing. They just don't care. Deal, dude.
The last real winter I can remember was 1979 here.
So where are you, Dirk, so people know?
Yeah, I'm based in Germany. And okay. In the northwest of Germany. So there's a city called Bremen, which you may have heard of. It's one of the port cities in Germany. And I live west to this, so close to the coast. That's why we don't have any real winters there.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to say Germany's well known for having lots and lots of snow.
But in the like Bavarian Alps and so on. But so the northern part is a bit more like Seattle, perhaps, from a weather perspective.
Wow. So that's cool. Yeah. You know, one of my favorite hamburger joints in the world is in Berlin. I don't even know where it is now, but it's been so long since I've been to Berlin. Who knows if I'll ever get back there at this point. So today we are talking about ICN. So I'll even start here. What does ICN mean?
Right. ICN means information-centric networking. So the way I'd like to explain it is that, so remember, you know, when the internet was young, so what was really cool about it? So you could interconnect a set of, you know, hosts, like maybe software-based routers and so on. And then you could, you know, start building your own applications, say, end-to-end, you know, server login, email, and all these beautiful things. And so it was very easy to try out new stuff, to innovate transport protocols and applications and so on. And so unfortunately, we have kind of lost this ability like over like many, many years. And if you look at the internet right now, well, it's, of course, powering everything on the world, like many, many different really critical services and businesses. But it's also, say, much more... say consolidated, you could, some people say, ossified and centralized. So these days the internet is really an infrastructure that's optimized, you could say, for maybe like web commerce things, centralized services, and so on. And it's not so easy for us anymore, for example, to communicate directly. So right now we are like having a video call. Everything goes through like centralized servers. We can't really do this like end-to-end, for example. And so there are several factors that play into this. Security is, of course, also very important. And so in ICN, so we are trying to kind of like take a step back and think, okay, how can we maybe create a network infrastructure that allows us to do like certain things like interconnecting at the edge, rapidly developing new applications and getting them on the network. How can we do that easier again, but without losing security and scalability and other important properties? So the fundamental idea is that you have a network model where the fundamental service is not like packet forwarding based on destination addresses, like we have an IP with an end-to-end service model. Instead, we assume that the network provides the service of accessing named data in the network in a secure way. And so this principle is not, say, new by itself. So this could be done at different layers. We all remember peer-to-peer file sharing systems like BitTorrent and so on, where you had things like a torrent descriptor that lists the hashes of the different chunks of a resource and so on. And then BitTorrent, for example, used a distributed hash table to locate suitable peers and so on. And earlier ICN systems actually adopted these concepts in the beginning and then further evolved them and so on. And a fun fact, you may have heard of IPFS, so one of the proclaimed Web3 enablers. It's actually quite similar to those earlier ICN systems, probably without even knowing. And today's mainstream ICN research and experimental systems, however, they work more on a packet level. So this is really about like providing the service of accessing named data on a packet level, so IP packet comparable. And then, thinking about how could you design a network that actually works, performs well enough, and so on. So one critical question that is kind of very important in this system from the beginning is, so when you say you asked for named data, you assume, okay, you get some data back, but how can you trust that? So how can you know that is actually the data that you asked for? So that means in these ICN systems, security needs to be a key element in the fundamental design. So you need to be able to trust the data, you need to have some named content binding, and the way to achieve this is to apply cryptography, so like signatures or hashes on the data. And so what ICN wants to achieve is that you can trust the data and the data is immutable in transit. So you can forward data and over untrusted nodes, you can replicate it and you can store it anywhere. So this is, you can already kind of imagine, this is quite a different model to what we know from IP. And so based on this, like these core concepts, it's basically the essence of the ICN system, and all the other features you could say are actually derived from this core principle. So accessing named data securely, because that means you can cache data, for example. It doesn't have to, when you ask for data, you don't care where it comes from. It can come from a like origin server, but it can as well be cached in the network. And so this then in turn also enables like new functionality for the network itself. So what we call a forwarder or a router could perform slightly different services compared to an IP router. And why is that interesting? So I mean, the internet and like the IP model, of course, we're super successful and also important to build this global network in the end. And but you have to understand the time where it was developed and where it grew and got implemented in real hardware and so on. So that was the time when everything, like all the machinery, was kind of slow. It was difficult to have a well-performing network running like this interactive audio-video services in the end. So it was a goal, and correctly so, it was a goal to have a fairly simple forwarding concept with like fairly simple implementations. And of course, we know that doing this at line rate and so on is then not so simple anymore. So this also had the consequence that because the network like forwarding layer was relatively simple, many, many more interesting features had to be done on higher layers. So things like CDN, for example, and request routing and these kind of things. So always require some kind of overlay. So IP is very good in providing this efficient forwarding service, but not much else. Other things like multipath forwarding can be done in IP or like with equal cost multipath forwarding, but you can't control it very well from an endpoint perspective. And so with ICN, the idea is let's empower like the forwarding plane a little bit, not too much that it gets maybe, you know, application aware and these things, but empower it a little bit so it can provide a slightly more useful services so that maybe we don't need that much functionality in like overlays and also management planes.
So now that you're talking about, you know, the services and what we can do with this, whenever someone says ICN and named data, what I think about is, you know, the example you gave before about BitTorrent and things like that. You're downloading a file or watching a movie or, yeah, I really don't care where Netflix puts the movie, right? As long as it gets to me in a timely fashion and I can download it and all that stuff. I'm sure that those types of applications where the data is sort of static, sitting somewhere in a cache, are not the only applications for ICN. Can you, you know, tell us about others that are maybe, you know, a little bit more dynamic or things that go beyond what I just what my imagination shows me right now?
Right. So this is maybe understandably that this is a common belief that ICN has something to do with like making content distribution more efficient or like replacing CDN or these kind of things. That's not really the case. So in essence, it's really a general purpose service. At least that's the intention. So you could as well do like interactive audio video with ICN, but it would work a bit different compared to what we do with IP and then our higher layer protocols. And so I have a few examples for applications that we could discuss in a bit, but to make this easier, maybe let me just explain a few more basic things first. So the model is that you are asking the network for named data. And so this is implemented by like two types of messages, you could say. So like it's like a request response model. So you're asking for data, this request gets propagated in the network, finds the data, and the data gets back to you. So in ICN, we call this request interests for named data. And then the reverse is a data message, so data with the named data. So here's the data and the associated name, and then also some cryptographic binding in it. And so that means so all the say interaction and so application logic in the end works with this paradigm. And I can understand that you think that you would say, okay, I can see how this works for static content in a cache or something. How would it work for interactive communication? Well, it would work like that you would constantly have to ask like for the next data item, for example. So this sounds a bit maybe unusual or maybe inefficient, but you have to kind of see this maybe as the reverse way that like how TCP works. So TCP, we are sending data and then we get acknowledgements. Basically, we are kind of triggering data transmission by sending an interest. We get the data back and then also like looking at, for example, how well that works, what the data rate is and so on. We can control our interest rate and then sustain a certain data rate and so on. So it's a different model, but you could apply it to all kinds of applications and services in the end.
This makes me think of a typical multicast control plane is what I'll like. You express interest in something in content, the network as a service then sees your request, delivers the requested artifacts or whatever. You would use in the multicast example, you'd use bidirectional PIM to do things like this, where you have many different endpoints connecting. Right. So it seems like there's some common components there. Would you agree?
Well, so not directly, but certainly say the design of ICN was also, of course, informed by, say, earlier work on multicast and multicast routing and so on. And in fact, so multicast is one of the other things that are hard to do in the internet today. So basically impossible, outside of your own controlled network. And in ICN, multicast would work in a different way. So the forwarder behavior is also a bit different, of course, to IP. So in IP, we do stateless forwarding. So at least by concept, forward, like based on longest path prefix matching and maybe other criteria these days. But fundamentally, I mean, it's a stateless model. In ICN, it's a bit different. So in ICN, we actually have stateful forwarding. So when I'm a forwarder, I get an interest. I need to make a decision, okay, which of my, say, outgoing phases would I need, would I use for forwarding this interest closer to the destination. So I make a note of that interest. And the assumption is that ICN uses symmetric forwarding. So the data packets are assumed to travel the reverse path that the interest passed. And basically, you are keeping some state for the moment of the where you have like pending interest for some piece of data. And then when you get the data message, this pending interest is consumed, you clear the state, and then you forward the data further downstream. Because you can identify these interests for named data, you could also implement some kind of multicast or multi-point distribution relatively easily. So you could say, well, I have many, many interests for the same piece of data. Actually, I only need to forward one upstream, and then I can keep the state. And then when I get the data, I have a record of, say, all the pending interests from my downstream, say, requesters. And then I could just deliver this one packet to all of those. And so this means you would have something like an implicit, say, tree building system here. And you wouldn't like need specific signaling or anything extra in that system.
Yeah, so to relate it to more closely what IP routing might do with multicast today, rather than saying, I want this stream and the router just replicates all the packets from that stream, you're actually saying, I want this particular set of packets that contain that information, and that those packets can be stored on the server. Could be. So you have to go all the way back to the server to get them, or they could be stored by routers in the network someplace, or a CDN type cache. It doesn't really matter.
Doesn't really matter. Yeah.
What kinds of trade-offs are you looking at? Because you mentioned that state would be tracked. I really like that idea of having the reverse path always be symmetric, but someone has to keep state for that to work. How does ICN view state in general?
Well, the textbook router model in ICN looked like that. We have a table for pending interest, right? And you would also have an additional content cache. I mean, it's optional. You don't have to do that, but because data is immutable, you could just as well decide, okay, I cache data, and then by normal caching logic, the more popular data is, the faster it's typically accessible. And of course, you would have to think about like scalability. So I mean, if you like do an edge router, you could easily imagine that the edge router would do that. For like core routers, you are really interested in really efficient forwarding, so maybe you would have simpler designs, so you wouldn't maybe cache that much and so on. Maybe we would also aggregate things, but in general, of course, the hardware requirements would be bigger compared to what you have for IP routers. So there are many interesting questions also when it comes to how to implement this at line rate and so on. So the names in ICN, so these are really hierarchically structured names. So you really have like a prefix and unlimited number of hierarchy levels. So you could for making forwarding decisions, you would also do something like prefix matching and so on. But you could imagine if you do this at line rate, when you get an incoming interest, and then you have to make a decision, okay, do I have this data cached? Where does it need to go? And so on. So this is a bit more demanding than doing PM on IPv6 addresses, for example. On the other hand, well, kind of the like state of the art in hardware design and so on is evolving, and so people have built like 100 gigabit per second ICN forwarders, for example, like DPDK and so on like general purpose hardware essentially. And so that's one of the say active research areas. So how to further optimize these systems that, I mean, that it could be like commercially viable and so on. But it's, yeah, that's of course one of the critical questions in the end. How will also larger networks really operate in the end?
I'm curious about name services. We've talked about names a couple of times. Is there a concept of resolution of names to other sort of locator type entities like addresses, or are names built in at a lower level, or how does that work?
So yeah, quite often when you hear about like systems that deal with like content identifiers or names and so on, people often have the assumption that there needs to be some kind of resolution that resolves these names to some lower layer address or identifier and so on. So the say mainstream ICN systems, that's actually not a first order principle. Let's put it like this. So you can actually have knowledge in your system about reachability of other prefixes and so on, and then build a routing system really based solely on names. And then you are making your forwarding decisions really on the availability of certain data with a certain prefix and so on. And so if you build a local network ICN system, you could say, okay, maybe I run a routing protocol, but say in a smaller scale network, because of the like more stateful behavior of these forwarders, sometimes you wouldn't even need a dedicated routing protocol. You could have something like what we call forwarding strategies on those routers. If you don't have one best interface for forwarding a current interest, you could apply things like broadcasting and then figuring out what comes back and then building some kind of tree-based by just observing what's happening in the network. And so that's a bit the idea also to make these also edge applications easier to compose. Of course, sometimes at certain scale, that's just too wasteful, and then you need something more efficient. But you could do things like linkstead routing based on names as well. So that has been done. So to answer your question, so name resolution is not an important requirement in these ICN systems. So that doesn't have to say that you cannot resolve names, but it's not the fundamental assumption that you have to resolve any name to do anything useful.
Yeah, so the name would resolve more to a piece of data than it would to a location. So if you had a lower layer construct that you were resolving to, it's to a piece of information. It's to a piece of data.
Right, exactly. And I mentioned caching in the forwarders. So that's a bit more like opportunistic caching. You could maybe even this just see this as a performance improvement. So like for like local retransmissions, these kind of things. But if you think about like static data, so like CDN type of data, well, because of the like immutability and like the naming concepts, it's very easy to if you see that a certain content is popular, to do things like automated like replication, so like create an additional repository on the fly, sync it with some origin server, and then you announce the data in your local network, for example. And by that, you're changing the forwarding behavior and getting this cost savings and performance improvements.
So if you look in the forwarding tables, you'll see some sort of hash that describes the data and not like an endpoint. Is that
the implementation? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you never see any endpoint. Basically, what you have is a mapping of prefixes to your outgoing interfaces, if you like.
In prefixes to interest, right? So that when I get the information, I can forward it to whoever's interested in that. You talked about, you know, maybe doing hierarchical naming and things along those lines. Mm-hmm. I imagine there has to be a way, and I have no idea how you're going to do this in terms of standardizing the hierarchy, or how do you propagate what the hierarchy looks like so that when new data comes on the network, there's maybe some dynamic naming of that data. Mm-hmm. Or that, you know, if it's related to other data, that it has a related name that can be aggregated. Because if not, obviously, those interest tables are going to grow, you know, immensely huge, because we might here be interested in, you know, data that is, I don't know, related to networking. But as long as we put everyone else in my neighborhood in that network, we get anything, or we can get everything in there at one time. So how do we deal with that type of scalability?
Yeah, that's also a great question. So you could say, I think there are like two contradicting goals here in ICN. So one is, so we want to use this hierarchical naming concept also to provide a more natural, easy to use way for application developers to, you know, build the applications, designing their own namespaces and naming conventions and so on. But at the same time, if you think about global scale network, well, from like our IP system, we also, yeah, we know that we need some kind of aggregation, we need some kind of topological relevance and so on. And so how can we bring this together? So currently we are thinking that, there will be some kind of indirection needed. So you're right. So you would need something like a more like stable and also perhaps more, let's say, organized naming structure. And you could say maybe there are some like sub namespaces that you could then build your application specific naming conventions on top of. But this is one of the, say, not already standardized or already decided features in the system. So that's.
Well, I'm kind of assuming if you would have a delegation process or something like that, like you would with DNS or X.500, even with objects and groups and things like that, where you can go up and down the hierarchy and see things that you want to see up and down.
Yeah. But it's clear that you cannot have both things. So like a totally flexible, naming system where everyone can name things like as they like, and then globally scalable routing. So this doesn't fit together, obviously.
All of this seems to imply to me that applications, if they choose to be like this, applications could be tightly coupled to a given network infrastructure. Is that correct, or is that an intention of ICN?
I wouldn't say so, of course, in the end, I would need some way to say reach the server on the say other continent or something, and there are different concepts in ICN that could be applied. So one is, for example, having this additional level of interaction with an additional resolution to like one name to another name, perhaps. We have a concept of what we call forwarding hints. So you have a name, but the interest can already contain some kind of, say, more topologically relevant name where to actually forward this interest to. So that all these different optimizations are, say, being investigated and being experimented with.
You just said something really interesting to me, that you have in the name, you include hints of where to forward the interest, which when I think where, I think of location and geography and things like that. Would that help in, when we think about security, you talk about security, about forwarding and having the data not change in flight and everything else. But I'm thinking about privacy and being able to restrict the information so that I may not be able to access something that is outside my jurisdiction somehow. Now, today, I log into that server and it's going to ask for credentials and maybe look at my IP address and know that I'm not close to that and decide not to give me the information. But when we do ICN, if I register, if I send out my interest in something and that gets buckled up with everything else in the forwarders, it seems a lot harder for them to decide they don't need to send me the information versus other people that are interested in it.
Right. So the way that we address this in ICN is crypto, so encryption. And of course, they are also like confidential applications and requirements in ICN that would require you to have some kind of access control and so on. And so this would all work with encryption in ICN. Of course, then you would also lose some of the, like, at least the sharing benefits of in-network caching. If everything is encrypted individually, then can't share it. But that will work. And so there are also approaches where you could say, for example, map the semantics of like a TLS 1.3 like session establishment onto like ICN interest data exchanges, and then you would have something like a confidential or encrypted tunnel to say another origin server. So that's all possible, but so not everything is like accessing static data that is named uniquely and so on. So some applications are really different. So you can do this with ICN, but some of these other features like sharing, multicast distributions, and of course wouldn't apply or wouldn't be available then.
So there's been a lot of talk about ICN, I think, for several years. And I imagine that there are implementations and some deployments. And you actually wrote an RFC on deployment considerations for ICN, which I was really excited about looking at because, you know, it actually turns, I guess, the theory into reality. Can you talk about a couple of the deployments that are out there and how are they being done? Or is it mostly overlays or, you know, what are they being used for?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, fundamentally, like IP, essentially, you can run ICN at different layers. So directly on layer two and in overlays and so on. And then there are different types of overlays. And it really depends. So an ICN forwarder today would have, the software prototypes that we are mostly using, like has different types of what we call faces. Ethernet, UDP overlay, and TCP overlay, and WebSockets, and so on. There was this like one branch of these ICN systems that was called CCNX. The original idea that got then later further developed by Cisco. And so they developed it's not a pure overlay system, but more like an embedding system that's called hybrid ICN. And so what they are doing there is basically using the IPv6 and TCP packet format, and then they're mapping the ICN semantics on it. So they're basically using all the bits that you have to kind of represent ICN packets so that unmodified IPv6 routers, you know, would still forward the packets. They couldn't do anything with the ICN semantics, of course. But you could then have something like a gentle introduction into your existing IPv6 network. And so there are all these different ways of running ICN. And I think the question you were asking is also, what's really going on? And so where are we after, like say 10 years or so. And I think the most of the interesting work in ICN is like more happening, say, on the application layer these days, so more on the edge networks, you could say, like building things for IoT and for distributed computing and these kind of things. And so ICN has a bit of an interesting history because so like 10 years ago, there was like considerable interest also with like the hardware vendors and operators for all kinds of a reason. And so in retrospect, I would say if you compare this to how IP developed and was developed and nurtured over many, many years, so IP had the advantage that it was really left alone for and left to the academics for quite a time, and then gradually was moved into some, say, more production use. And so now ICN had initially lots of say big vendor interest and so on, and people were always concerned, okay, how can we make this scalable, how can we build our core networks and so on. And I would say this was actually not really helping the development of this technology, because I think a better way to bring some innovation to like the internet is really doing this from the edge. I think that's what we learned also in for other systems. And it's not a very smart idea to do the very hard problems, say like global routing scalability and so on first, when you actually don't even know how you would actually use the system and when you haven't demonstrated like the benefits for application developers and so on. So I think that has kind of slowed down impacted the development a little bit. And so now what I'm seeing mostly is like application development, edge computing and these kind of things.
Yeah, that's what I imagined, Dirk, what you were explaining, which is individual applications or individual domains, my network, for my edge computing or whatever, that I use something like ICN inside my network. So now I have better control over the content, over the naming spaces, et cetera. And it makes it useful, but at the same time, we don't have to deal with some of the other scalability issues that you were mentioning. Maybe, I don't know, we end up joining domains of little applications to build those bigger networks at some point. But yeah, this is a lot of interesting work. And I think it's been really great to have you on today.
Yeah. So Dirk, can people find your work someplace other than the ICN working group mailing list? And should they join that mailing list and get interested in working on it?
Yes, so I think that would be my first recommendation to really check out the IRTF's Information Centric Networking Research Group, ICNRG. It's an open group, like many international projects, exchange their ideas and share their work there. So if you want to play with software, I recommend checking out the Named Data Networking NDN project. And so they have developed many prototypes for forwarders, applications, and also higher layer services for ICN.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Okay, then. Well, thanks, Dirk, for coming on. Tom, where can people find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter. Just search for Tom Ammon, and I'm probably the person that you'll come up with.
All right. What about you, Alvaro?
Almost every social media. I still haven't gotten myself to open a TikTok account and post stuff. But other than that.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you've got to back off social media there, some Alvaro.
You can find me. I didn't say I was on it, but
And Dirk, how about you?
Yeah, you can find me on my personal homepage and thekutcher.info and also on Twitter and other social media.
Okay, I'll try to remember to put your personal homepage on in the show notes so people can click there and find you if they want to. All right. I'm Russ White. You always find me here at The Hedge on rule11.tech. Who knows? Wherever else. I don't know. I'm not as social as Alvaro is. So, all right. Again, thanks, Dirk, for coming in.
Thanks a lot for having me, and thanks for the good questions.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Awesome. We'll catch you next time on The Hedge.
Subscribe to The Hedge on your favorite podcast service or follow along at rule11.tech.